welcome to Conductor's Brew, everybody. It's good to be back in the front yard with you. Matt, how are you doing, my friend?
Good morning, Larry. It's good to have you back. I'm doing quite well, thank you. The lawn has been cut. The road construction has been finished.
Oh, yes. I noticed that.
Larry, you could actually park in front of the house today.
I was pleased with that. They've actually moved on to my part of the neighborhood.
Oh, really?
Yes, the cutting machines have shown up.
Oh, isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
Wakes you up at 7 a.m., rumble.
Did they really start cutting?
They were starting pretty early, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, 7 to 8-ish.
That's not cool.
But, you know, only for a couple days of that, and then they leave a big gap in the road for about a week or two.
Yeah.
And so, you know, just in case you were curious about whether or not you'd be falling into the abyss of...
How big is the gap?
The underparts of Salt Lake City. Oh, you know, just a few inches wide most.
Well, I'm a little larger than that,
it's still
kind of
neat to look down. Because, well, don't be like that, Larry. Come on. Now, it was concerning for a while. They had holes in the lawn because they were putting Google Fiber in, so they had to put it in this whole new box or something, electrical box in the lawn.
Oh, yeah.
There's still some that they haven't done, as you can see over across the street there. But,
oh, wow.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, it's exciting times
morning.
In Salt Lake. We're getting our Google Fiber. So there you go.
Yes.
All right.
We've got Google Fiber, and we've got the vice presidential debate coming up.
Oh,
too.
Oh my gosh! Oh, that's creating all kinds of havoc at the university.
Yes, that's opening up a whole can of worms, I'm sure.
Basically we have
shutting down the university for a couple of weeks.
Well, and not only that, but they're so the debate's going to happen at Kingsbury, which is right next door to the School of Music building, right next to Gardner Hall,
performing theater on campus.
Yeah, and so I think they're taking over Gardner Hall for like the media hub.
Oh,
so like all their live coverage will be in a practice
room
somewhere.
Are they?
What?
They're not even going to use it for music.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe Mike Pence will bust into song over there. I don't know. Kamala Harris will sing an aria for us. Anyway, but yeah, it's going to be crazy this semester. I'm thinking of this moment right now as the calm before the storm with the semester.
It really is.
As we talked about last week with McKeever, things are going fairly well. We're kind of getting into our stride, but man, it could change quick. But anyway, I think we're going to talk more about that later in the show. So let's put a pin in that.
Okay.
And let's get on to the real important thing.
The real important thing.
What are we drinking
must
today?
Must be the brew of the day. Yes. Well, I am on a La Barba kick.
Yeah, I know.
They're local, and I've been seeing them in the grocery store, and I thought, well, I might as well just try all the different varieties. And last time, I think we had the Ethiopian, or was that the time before that? I don't remember. Anyway, I'm losing track.
I want to say Ethiopian was 2 weeks
okay.
ago. No. A week ago. We could solve this by going back and listening,
we
but
could.
We don't
yes.
really care
for
that
all
much.
You listeners, you can tell that how much show prep I've done in recapping our previous previous encounters.
Heavily researched.
This is a Colombian single origin, a Santa Rosa varietal or producer. Not quite sure. It's on the label, though. It's a Santa Rosa, so I don't know my coffee that well. If it's a varietal and you know it is, let us know. If it's a producer and you know it is, let us know. But anyway, the description says stone fruit, dark chocolate, and honey. And I have to say, I think I get all of those. Maybe heavy on the honey and the chocolate. And it's kind of nutty, too. It's sort of like a roasted, peanut sort of a taste.
I definitely am tasting the honey.
Mm-hmm.
And I know.
Oh, yeah.
So stone fruit, that's like cherries.
Yeah,
and
plums and apricots.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I think it could be any
one of those.
Yeah, anything like that. That kind of
okay.
It's almost like an acidic kind of mouth puckery, tannic kind of. You know how red wine sort of makes your mouth pucker?
Sure.
Kind of like that.
Now, this might open up a can of worms, and the show might become nothing but this question. But when they have these tasting notes, now these are these things they add to the coffee, or are these things that are like in the environment where it's grown and it kind of takes on that? How does the stone fruit get into the coffee?
It's an excellent question.
I thought it might be, go.
Yes. Okay. It's not a flavoring.
Yes. Okay.
It will. In this case, it's not a flavoring. There are a lot of flavored coffees out there, of course.
Yeah.
But they most likely wouldn't say single origin. It would probably be a blend that has, it says, like raspberry chocolate mountain or something fancy like that,
Mm-hmm.
No, so these are just tasting notes. And most of the coffee that is grown to be produced in smaller batches or to be like specialized coffee, it's actually the small minority of coffee out there. So most of the coffee that you buy in the grocery store, think Folgers or Dunkin' Donuts. Actually, Dunkin' Donuts is pretty good for what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I like their stuff.
But think, you know, like instant coffee and just like cheap run-of-the-mill pre-ground coffee. A lot of that is kind of the bulk of the production in the world. And it doesn't really have much flavor to it. So they don't even bother putting tasting notes on it. It's just, you know, coffee. And they roast the, you know, what out of it to cover up any potential defects in the flavors.
Right.
So a lot of that mass-produced coffee is on the darker side. Mm-hmm. This is a lighter roast for sure. When I ground it up this morning, it looked like the beans were almost barely roasted. I mean, they were almost green still, practically. Wow. Yeah, it was really, really lovely to look at, and its smell was incredible. But I always get whole bean coffee. But to answer your question, the second part of your question, yes, it has to do with the varietal, the type of plant that's producing the coffee. I mean, there's two different species of coffee. There's the Arabica, and then there's the, oh gosh, I think it's Suprema or something. Anyway, and out of those, there's a small group of producers throughout the world, not just, you know, one particular place, but throughout the world that their coffee's more expensive. We're talking on the order of $15 to $20 per pound at, you know, at least, because of the way it's produced and grown and then dried or washed. So the little seed has to come out of the little coffee bean. It's basically, or coffee cherry, I think they call it. It's like a little fruit. And the seed, the coffee bean, is actually the seed of the plant's fruit. And so the way you get that out of the bean is, or out of the fruit is variable. You can do a dry method, you can do a wet wash method. There's all sorts of different kinds of things you can do in processing the coffee. And then roasting it is really where the finesse of each particular producer, I think, comes into play. They really try to latch onto how each particular region's terroir tastes. Mm-hmm. For instance, like you said, you know, is it in the soil? Yes, it is. It's in the soil. Is it in the air? Yes, it's in the air. Is it in the water? Yes. And it seems the best flavored coffees come from higher altitudes because the plants have to adapt to the harsher conditions. It's less oxygen, stronger sunlight. Usually it's a little bit drier, much drier, in fact. And so the plants are better at concentrating the minerals into the actual fruits. And so what that means is when you grow coffee and produce coffee from a higher altitude area, usually it's a more concentrated flavor, it's a higher quality flavor, more going on, more nuance, more depth, because you're getting more of the character of the plant in the actual fruit because of its growing conditions. It was complicated.
Well, you know, but that was a can of worms. I signed up for that.
Yes, you did.
I signed up for it. I knew we were going to go there, but, you know, we have a... We have a little bit of a different format for our show today, and so we have a little bit extra time. So I figured that today was the day to dive a little deeper into this, because I didn't know that stuff.
Well, I'm certainly no expert, but that's what I've learned.
Well, you know a lot more than I do. So
well, it's fascinating. It is really like wine, or even like craft beer, where a lot of the flavors depends heavily on not just each producer's methods, but where the ingredients are grown.
Right.
And certainly for coffee, where you're really just you're imparting the water with a flavor, you're extracting the flavor from the beans into water. It's an immersion, infusion, I guess, and that's all it is. It's just one ingredient. Well, two if you count water. Mm-hmm. So the water you use makes a big difference too. So I filter my water because I don't want chloriney, weird city, you know, old pipe taste in my coffee.
Yeah, I do that even for the random drip coffee that I make too.
It makes a big difference.
It does. But so basically it takes on the stuff from the soil and the air and everything. So that's why it has these different kind of flavors. That's really fascinating stuff. And, you know, to me, I just like enjoying tasting the complexity of all the flavors. Even if I don't necessarily can like identify what this is going to taste like, I just like sort of sensing the change and from one thing to the next. And those light roasts, like you said, don't cook out all that nuance. Mm. So you've opened my eyes, my friend.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Well, let's move on to our musically oriented nerd moments.
Yes, because that has devolved into a scientific slash culinary nerd moment.
But no, it's good. Yeah. It's good. And if you don't mind, I'll go first because I have kind of a short one.
Please.
Today, so I've been kind of straightening up my office because I'm now teaching on Zoom from my home office.
Oh, is that your office? When you refer to your office, it's your house?
Yeah, I have an office space in my apartment.
Okay.
Right.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, you can write it off. I remember we were talking about this.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
I'm
still not sure about that, but if I can, I certainly will. But anyway, I've been straightening it up because I'm teaching from at home, my conducting classes on Zoom. And I was going through my books, and I came across the Maynard Solomon biography of Beethoven, which I read, you know, many years ago. And I just kind of wanted to, you know, it's obviously a book that's been around for a while, and a lot of musicians have probably read it or familiar with it.
It's a famous biography.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the best. Mm. He also wrote a really great one on Mozart
Solomon,
as well.
Solomon, S-O-L-O-M-O-N.
Yeah, three O's.
Three O's.
Maynard, Solomon, with three O's.
Whenever I hear Maynard, I think of...
S-O-L-O-M-O-N.
What's the name of that band? Was it Perfect Circle?
What?
Tool. Tool. Isn't that a band that has a guy named Maynard in it?
I don't
Random
know, Matt.
Association. You know, I'm right in that in-between period where I've had just enough but not enough coffee.
It's the
Yeah, please forgive my random association.
It's the connections are firing in odd ways.
Indeed.
In your head.
Not to interrupt you, but...
No, that's okay.
Maynard Solomon, Beethoven.
Beethoven, yeah. And it covers his whole life. It's a full-focus biography. But one of the things I like about it is there's a whole chapter about the immortal beloved. And if you remember, there was I think it came out maybe 20 years ago or so, maybe more than that, a movie about Beethoven titled The Immortal Beloved.
Yeah.
Gary Oldman plays Beethoven.
Oh,
I really
does.
Enjoyed that movie. I thought it was excellent.
Well, here's another random association.
Go ahead.
Gary Oldman, The Fifth Element.
Okay.
He plays the evil guy in that, doesn't he?
Not sure.
I'm pretty sure.
I just remember it was Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
And, Chris Tucker.
Chris Tucker.
That's hilarious.
Actually, incidentally, one of my favorite scenes in all of filmmaking is the opera scene in that film.
Oh, yes!
Where they have this beautiful soprano singing, and all of a sudden it's this alien that's singing. And if you haven't seen the film, you have to see it, but it's... you have to see it to kind of understand the aesthetic of it. It's this alien voice this alien singer who can do... So the movie is science fiction, right? So there's an alien, not like an Earth alien, but like an actual... out there, UFO alien, who sings this aria, and I looked it up once. I think it was Verdi or Donizetti or something. That it turns into like this sort of trance hip hop version of opera, an opera aria. But she does these fantastically strange things with her voice. It's a soprano voice, but then she goes down to like the tenor and the bass range.
Yeah,
and this is like the big deal in all of singing. Anyway, I digress yet again. That's my fifth element plug. It's a great movie. You should watch it.
Fifth Element, Beethoven's Fifth Symphony.
Oh.
Makes complete sense now. It is a really good scene. I remember that movie. I love it. Perhaps that needs to be a separate nerd moment just about that scene, because it's really cool. Anyway,
it's worth looking at, yeah.
But back to The Immortal Beloved. So this movie is really well done, beautifully shot, such good acting. I mean, Gary Oldman's amazing. And I know, I love it, but according to Solomon, which is a heavily researched book, I was constantly flipping back to footnotes to kind of get the detail, and I feel like you really kind of have to do that with a book like that. They get it wrong. Not to just ruin it, but according
to
Solomon...
Who gets it wrong?
The movie.
Oh,
well,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I'm going to go with Solomon.
Yeah.
I'd
put more weight on his scholarly research
rather
than a Hollywood film.
Yeah, and I'm not going to spoiler alert, but the way they do in the movie, it's really a good storytelling, but it's not according
right.
to Solomon accurate. But if you want to know the true story, or at least as true as we can get about who the Immortal Beloved was, this famous letter that Beethoven wrote, read the book. And it's just and it reads well too. So there's my nerd moment. Beethoven by Maynard Solomon,
in which they discuss the
which
they
has a whole chapter on.
Well, that reminds me of another famous film adaptation of a composer's life, Amadeus.
Oh yeah.
And they get a lot wrong in that too. Salieri did not kill Mozart. Let's just settle that for the record. They were colleagues. They got along just fine. But most of the rest of it's pretty accurate. It's pretty
That's
great
true.
Film. Yeah.
But Who played Salieri?
I don't know.
Oh, I almost got it. But anyway, he does such a good job.
Yeah, he does. He's great.
That opening scene of that movie he's in the home.
And he tells the whole story from the home when the priest comes to see him, and it's really a good film, I think.
Yeah, I love it. So
great drama.
Don't put on your musicologist hat when you watch it. Just put on your enjoyment mm-hmm. hat. Just you're watching it for fun and for the great music.
No, when I've shown this film I've shown the PG version in classes.
Yeah,
because there's two different versions. There's the
there's a little bit of nudity in there.
Yeah, that's which
in the real version
I won't get into. But it's fun to point out those discrepancies in the narrative of the film versus what we know about his life or think we know what the evidence says, the scholarly evidence says.
Yeah,
what makes interesting drama doesn't always comport with the facts. Interestingly enough. Who would have thunk that?
Yeah. It's also pacing and stuff and storytelling. But like I said, you can just enjoy it.
Yes.
And there is a lot of stuff that is accurate. And, of course, the music is great, there.
Yeah. I think it's Sir Neville Mariner and the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields. They do a whole compilation of symphonies and opera stuff. So,
yeah, it's good stuff.
I guess I should get to my nerd moment.
Yeah, let's do it.
So I found out last week, just after we finished recording our show, in fact, last week, that another of my fall concerts has been canceled.
Oh, man.
Unfortunately, yeah. It's a Christmas concert. This is the one I've been talking about with Handel's Messiah and Christmas carols.
Well, no, you mentioned that last week, I thought. No. We were still talking about that.
Yeah, we were discussing it. I actually got the text message while we were recording, and I didn't see it until afterwards.
Right. That was the one that you were trying to figure out, pairing Christmas carols with the Messiah.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Which I think I did fairly successfully. So we'll be able to use that program in future years.
Right.
It'll be
a lot of fun. It still won't be valid.
Yeah. It'll still be valid. And so...
unlike the program I missed in May, which is about celebrating the end of World War II, 75th anniversary, so I gotta maybe wait till the 80th anniversary or something.
Yeah, I know.
So,
I mean, we had Beethoven's 250th anniversary this year. That was
hard
to skip that.
I had a whole season program around that too. But anyway, I digress.
Anyway, no, it's okay. So the concert was canceled in December, and in a way, I'm relieved because I was really concerned about how to gather so many community members together in a way that was safe. It's not just these local players. It includes a lot of locals, but there's also folks who come from all over the state, really, 4 or 5 hours drive. So I think the concern was really about, in a way, contaminating the area.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the board made the right decision. I'm also very disappointed, of course. I had planned a concert, which we just talked about, that was alternating these Messiah chorus numbers with those traditional carols. And I was going to write my own arrangements, new arrangements, to match our specific instrumentation based on who had said they were going to participate, because we had a survey sent out and all that. And,
mm-hmm.
Part of that was a way to avoid rental fees, to be honest. But mostly it's to have another creative outlet and to have some fun. I love to arrange. I think it's a fascinating, exciting process, really, that allows for a lot of individualism and a lot of expressivity. This is all to say, I was really looking forward to it, and so I'm kind of having to rethink that. So we're already looking at the next concert in the spring. They only do two, three concerts max a year. So once again, we're going into planning mode. The carols, though, I just wanted to touch on some of these. Angels We Have Heard on High, O Come All Ye Faithful, The First Noel, Joy to the World, and Hark the Herald Angels Sing.
Good ones.
Yeah. Now, Larry, I grew up Catholic.
I did, too.
I know you, so we know these carols, I would imagine, from singing them in church every Christmas, if not more, because often we sing them in advance, and then after, because of the 12 days of Christmas, and then Advent comes
Epiphany.
Before Christmas. Yeah, so we're singing these carols all the time. I've sung many, many a Christmas carol, and I know most of the famous ones by heart, at least the first verse, or most of the first verse. It always amazes me to see some of the congregation know that know 3 or 4 verses of a hymn. It's just amazing to me by heart. So in my research on the origins of these carols, because I was trying to link them thematically with the Messiah excerpts, I I realized just how little I actually know about where some of these come from. Take, for instance, Hark the Herald Angels Sing. Now, Larry, would you say that most musicians at least know that that tune, da 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 da, da comes from Mendelssohn?
Yes.
Yes.
I think.
I think, yes. It's usually in the hymnal, it says Mendelssohn.
It does.
It doesn't give attribution
to... Just like it says
to...
Dvorak in Going Home, which was from the Ninth Symphony.
Oh, I forgot that's used in church. And yeah, there's also some Holst, I think, the Jupiter...
Oh, yeah.
...is used in church. Yep.
Yeah, you'll get that probably in the Episcopal Church particularly, but yeah, you know, it's a hymn, Going Home, it's often used at funerals and stuff like that. The words were written... can't remember the guy who wrote
it's
but
the
anyway.
Longest slow movement in the history of music.
Yeah. Don't bring up Dvorak hate. I love that movement. Anyway, yeah, but they turned it into a hymn.
I just can't.
Mendelssohn's yeah. Hark the Herald Angels
so
turned into a hymn.
Angels saying, I was looking into this. I knew it was by Mendelssohn. I assumed it was... I made assumptions that were incorrect. Let me just say that.
Okay.
The tune that Mendelssohn wrote was, in fact, not intended to be used in a religious context originally.
Okay.
Mendelssohn's tune was adapted for use as a carol by another man, a man named William Cummings, who himself was a musician, actually, and actually a fairly well-known tenor of the day. This is the mid-1800s. I am now going to attempt to pronounce the full title of the piece that Mendelssohn wrote,
okay,
part of which was adapted for Hark the Herald Angels Sing. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
I practiced this.
Okay. So here's, I can edit if we need to.
Here's Mendelssohn's original work's title. Okay, here goes. Festgesang zur Eröffnung der am ersten Tage der vierten Säkularfeier der Erfindung der Buchdruckerkunst auf dem Marktplatz zu Leipzig stattfindenden Feierlichkeiten.
Auf Deutsch?
Yeah. I practiced that.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Sehr gut, ja.
So this is a... yeah. Thank you. How do you say thank you in German? I don't remember.
Danke.
Bitte? Danke. Oh, yeah, danke.
Bitte means a lot of things, but it, you know, please in this context.
So this is a four-movement secular cantata, which I didn't know about. And you know why I didn't know about it? It's not in the Daniels.
No. Well, if it's not in the Daniels, it doesn't count.
Yeah, it's not. It's you know, it's one of his works without opus number. I think it's number 7, W-O-7.
It's a woo.
Yeah, it's a woo. It was not intended for religious usage, but the backstory of this is fascinating. It was actually used as outdoor celebration music to commemorate, get this, the 400th anniversary of Johannes Gutenberg's invention of movable type.
Ah!
And it was played outdoor in a marketplace and sung, and it's beautiful, and it's also known as the Gutenberg Cantata. For that reason.
Now, if I can do a tangent,
please.
There's a religious connection to that because the Gutenberg printing press was instrumental in the Protestant Reformation. I mean, I can't get in a magic time machine and say, well, what would happen if they didn't have the printing press? But, I mean, it was essential for distributing the Bibles in vernacular languages
this
and
is
pamphlets.
True. Oh, that's a
so
really
you,
good point.
You can't
disassociate them, really, now.
And history has all these connections for us, so...
Anyway, the melody. Thank you for that. That's a great tangent. I didn't think about that connection. That's true. The melody in question. So do do ti do mi mi re so 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 fa mi re mi is the second movement of the cantata. Actually, begins in beat 3 in 4/4 time. Da 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 da.
Okay.
You can't see me conducting. Sorry.
Yeah, he gestured outwards.
Yes.
That means it's beat 3.
It's almost note for note the same as the form it takes in "Hark the Herald Angels Sing." William Cummings adapted it for a Christmas carol, and I do think it's interesting to note the difference in texts. So here's the first few lines of text from the Mendelssohn original Gutenberg version.
Oh.
It's very patriotic. And it starts, Vaterland, in deinem Grauen brach der goldene Tag einst an. Deutschland, deine Wirke sahen seinen Schimmer niedertauen. Gutenberg, der deutsche Mann, zündete die Fackel an. Which means, Fatherland, the golden day once dawned in your districts. Germany, your people saw its glimmer thaw. I don't know what that means. Gutenberg, the German man, lit the torch.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
And that's just the first verse.
Well, I mean, I'm going to, you know, mad respect to Gutenberg and his printing press, but I mean, I know it was yes. definitely crucial.
Well, indeed,
I don't think of it as being sort of patriotic, but I guess, you know, he was German, and the Germans are going to be like, yeah, that Gutenberg. Was we did that.
You lit our torch.
You really can't underestimate the power of the printing
press.
Well,
dovetailing from what you said about on that religious context, I mean, the Lutheran. Was it the Reformation? What was it that Luther did? It's not the Reformation, was it?
Yeah
it was. Okay, thank
Protestant
you. Yeah.
Reformation.
Yeah, yes, the Reformation. I mean, was Martin Luther was German?
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be reading this off of my printed piece of paper if it wasn't for Gutenberg. Yeah. Now 500-600 years, something a long time ago.
You didn't use movable type to print that, though, did you?
Well, what I'm saying is, if that hadn't happened, I wouldn't have had a printer now, probably.
Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah.
Just like if Al Gore hadn't invented the internet.
Correct. Where's Al Gore's cantata?
You know, that actually sort of leads into my rant of the day, but we can wait for later.
We have to wait because yes. it's going to happen soon for us, but for you out there in radio land, you're gonna hear something really awesome.
Yeah.
You're gonna hear us stop talking about random stuff, and we're gonna get on to our main topic of the day.
Yeah.
But we're doing good with our format today. So.
Yeah,
was that the nerd moment in total?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So now
I had to get in the Gutenberg bit there, but I'm good. Yeah,
yeah. I appreciate that. I you know, my day's not complete if I haven't talked about movable type. So, topic of the day. Abrupt segue. So we normally have a guest here in the front yard or via the Zoom, mm-hmm. But it's just us this morning. But that's because we have already recorded our segment with our guests. We have taking the show on the road, as it were.
Yeah, we had a special week this week.
We did, and we traveled. Our setup is light and nimble, so we can easily take our
props
studio.
Props to Larry for that.
Well, it's a microphone and an iPad. it's basically it. So we went out to visit the Salt Lake Symphony rehearsal, and
one of them.
Right, correct. Because yeah. as we'll talk about, I think in the interview, we can just mention it now real quick. They actually are separating their winds and their strings, and our good friend Matt McKeever is rehearsing the winds at the same time that Dr. Baldwin was rehearsing the strings. Well, we went to go hear the strings with Dr. Baldwin, and we'll have a few clips of that. You can hear some of what they're doing, and also it's from their rehearsal. And also we sat down for about 30 minutes mm-hmm. with Dr. Baldwin and sort of talked with him about how things are going and how this new normal of rehearsing outside is working out.
Yes, they met in, the strings at least met in, the rehearsal that we saw, there was a park down by Big Cottonwood Canyon, and I guess last week they had rehearsed outside in the open air, and this week they moved under the pavilion, mm-hmm. which is this beautiful, I guess, roundish shape. I don't know what you would call that shape because it had many, many sides. Dodecahedron or something. I don't know. But there was this funnel shape that goes straight up above the center of the pavilion, and that's where the conductor
was
standing.
It's kind of like a yurt.
Yeah, it looks sort of like a yurt. And the musicians were in a semicircle around. And you'll hear this described in the interview, how we discussed the acoustics. It was really, really quite a beautiful setting, actually.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful sunset. The temperature was fantastic. It's only so long that can happen, I suppose, until it gets a little too chilly. But for the time being, that's a really great solution. It seemed like they really found a way to make it work for them.
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah. through the magic of editing,
yes.
we now take you to Big Cottonwood Park in our interview with Dr. Rob Baldwin.
So this is exciting. We're actually live outside of the front yard.
This is our first actual field trip.
Field trip. This is the podcast not in the front yard, which is kind of weird.
It is a little strange.
And we're in Big Cottonwood Regional Park.
But it's nice to get out.
Yeah.
It is.
To say. It's nice to get out.
And we had a rehearsal.
Rehearsal
just finished.
Yes, it did. It did most definitely did get finished. We're going to actually kind of put all this in the show beforehand.
So rehearsal's
okay.
About to happen.
Just stop it.
Do you want to start over?
No, I don't want to start over again. We'll never get going. All right, but we're here in Big Cottonwood Regional Park, and we're here with Dr. Rob Baldwin, who just conducted the Salt Lake Symphony rehearsal, and we're here. We talked with you a couple of weeks ago, and by the way, thank you for being on the show again.
Great to be back.
Yeah, we talked with you a couple of weeks ago over Zoom, and it's nice to see you in person. By the way, it's nice to see that I'm not the only one growing out the hair.
No, I'm working on the. I'm passing my junior high record for long hair in the back here.
I conducted my first rehearsal with it the other day, and I didn't enjoy it. So
did it get in the way, Larry?
Yeah, we talked about this.
Oh,
last
we
week.
Did. Yes.
Yeah, we're not going to go over this again. But anyway, it's good to have you back. Good to see you in person. And we wanted to follow up and kind of see how things were going. We talked about your plan, what you were going to do a few weeks ago when we interviewed you before. And kind of now that it's actually happening, wanted to see how's it going. You're rehearsing outside. You are, implementing this plan. And it sounded pretty good. But what are your first impressions about how are you feeling rehearsing outside is going? Was it what you anticipated it would be?
Actually, it's a little better than what I anticipated. The first time we tried this, we were actually about 100 yards over that way on the shuffleboard court.
Out in the open. I should describe where we are right now. We are under a pavilion that has this beautiful wood ceiling and is sloping upwards directly above the center of the pavilion, which is where you were conducting, and the orchestra was in a semicircle around you. So it seemed like all the sound was kind of shooting right into the middle where you were.
It was. And we should also say that all of the sides are open. And so we are really outside. I mean, you can feel occasionally breezes, blow through. But there's a little bit of sound reflection that is happening because of these this wooden pavilion, picnic pavilion ceiling. It's a thing you don't really notice much and even when you picnic here, then you get underneath it and you look at it, and acoustically, it works pretty well.
Plus, once you've had a brew or two, you don't really notice. It helps to amplify the voices. And,
That's absolutely right.
Hopefully, nobody was drinking before rehearsal started.
Well, we're out in the pavilion, so
that's fair enough. So, how long do you plan on doing this? I mean, tell us a little about this whole timeline that you've put together with Salt Lake Symphony, this first concert that you've got coming up.
Well, our first program is on September 19th, and that's a we planned for it to be an outdoor concert, and the main thing about this, of course, is it's weather permitting, and here in Utah, weather does permit that. Usually, the autumns are relatively dry. Usually you get into October and then it starts to rain and it starts to get kind of, crappy weather for having an orchestra outdoors. But we figured we could make it. We would get out of the heat part of the year and have a small window where we could do something outdoors. And so that was the plan with this. And we took the idea of still not mixing. We've got two different ensembles, the string serenade, which you heard tonight, and about 3/4 of a mile away, maybe if you listened really carefully, the wind serenade was going on with the assistant conductor, Matthew McKeever, who was working with them in a very similar structure. I mean, all Salt Lake County parks sort of have a certain era about them where they were built like this.
What park is he at?
They're at Creekside Park. Creekside, it's also a big Cottonwood Regional Park. There's like three parks in this system in this part of town. So, but they, where we have this section up here where there's a big softball complex that isn't being used, of course, because of COVID, they are in the Frisbee golf part of the park, which I think there were people playing Frisbee golf.
That was popular when I was in college.
Well, there's one.
No, I was late 90s.
I'm not sure that was invented when I was in college yet. So
very, very late 90s.
Well, there's a couple things I wanted to remark on and ask you about and related to this setting in particular. First, which I think is amazing, there's something about being in a public venue that people can just walk up and listen and watch. And there were quite a few. I found it fascinating watching people hear and then come up and say, oh, what is that? You know, and then take some video and whatnot. What kind of concert experience are you imagining for folks, assuming you can go ahead with it as planned in this outdoor venue? Like, what will that look like?
Well, I think some of it will look like just what you described. People will be walking through the park and they will hear music and they will see some sort of event and they'll stop and listen. So we get, you know, dog walkers, you get people that are playing with their kids in the playground and they decide to bring them up. Last week we had a whole family came up and the father had the two small kids lifting them up so they could see the instruments. And it was actually really nice from a sort of community engagement in a way that you don't do when you're in a rehearsal room or in a concert hall where it's all closed off.
And it's people so secret.
And so here we are, right? Yeah. And so people wonder what's going on. But the other great thing about it is we all have been deprived of live music now for a good 6 months. And so when you hear it and you see it happening, it's almost like it's a magnet.
Yes, people can't avoid it. Yeah.
They seek it out. They just like they're drawn to it. And so I think normally, you know, if you were doing something like this, people might notice it and look at it. But like you said, they're getting their phones out. They're taking a picture, taking some video, sharing it. They don't even know who we are. Right. We should probably get a big banner and say the Salt Lake Symphony. But they're saying, hey, look what I saw.
So in the concert, then, I mean, will it be a ticketed event or will it just be totally open to the public?
We're gonna it'll be open to the public. We're gonna advertise it, ask people to socially distance. We don't even know where the location is yet. Okay. It won't be in this location.
I see.
We're gonna have it, but something similar with an open park type of location. Ask people to socially distance. And if you even think about the fact that there's 24 musicians in the string group and another 13 in the wind group, and if everyone brought two people, already you got 60 people showing up at the park.
So are we encouraging social media sharing for this sort of thing? Because normally, you know, taking cell phone videos is highly discouraged in a concert hall. Is this different? Is this going to be, you know, just take all the videos you want and share?
Completely different. Great. I think it's a very celebratory, open event.
Awesome.
And it's not in a concert hall. I mean, there are certain challenges with that being outdoors. Mm-hmm. The sprinklers came on, as you saw, in the middle of the slow movement, right?
The mic may have picked that up.
It brought me to tears.
that was just a sprinkler in your face.
Just the sprinklers.
Well, as soon as you know when it's going to happen and where, I should say.
It will be the 19th of September at 6 o'clock somewhere.
Once the undisclosed location is disclosed, let us know and we'll plug it. Yeah. We'll plug it to our vast listenership.
The other thing I wanted to ask about, which is related to being outside, is how does it feel different for you, the conductor, being in the middle of this group of people with everybody sort of separated by at least 8 to 10 feet, it seemed. How does that feel different from being on a stage in a concert hall?
Well, from the perspective, you guys, I think, did mention that we're in the round here. This is a round pavilion with kind of a spiral design or the spokes of a wheel, these picnic tables. Mm-hmm. And so it sort of gives us some rows to easily self-define for the musicians. But it's strange for me to have musicians behind me. Mm-hmm. And so the cellos and the violas were behind me, and I had to rotate a little bit to cue them and then turn back. In some ways, it's a great sort of surround sound experience because it's all coming at me. We've practiced a few weeks ago. We tried sort of a big orchestral setup in a line the way you would normally see on the stage with me at the center and then people going out like they would. And what you mentioned was the problem, the 6 feet, 8 feet distance, the people in the back couldn't hear a thing.
Wow.
And because we're rehearsing like this, we're actually playing across to each other.
Yeah.
And so the people in the back of the cellos aren't just feeling like they only can hear themselves. They're actually hearing the violins, where before the violins were probably 45 feet away.
Yeah. In a way, it's almost better than being in a concert hall.
In some ways. And in fact, I think, you know, depending on where we end up, I wouldn't mind even performing this way.
Wow.
I don't think it matters. The presentational aspect of here's the orchestra, here's the stage, we're all in tuxedos, you know, that doesn't really even matter.
Mm-hmm.
What matters is what it sounds like and the fact that people are gathering for live music.
Have you had any of the players have trouble with the round in terms of visuals, like seeing you or?
No, it's actually better.
Really?
When you think about it, you know, if we had the violins, you know, going off and the sides and the cellos going off in the sides, people would actually be further away.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
and now everyone's actually closer. So that's not been an issue.
And it's funny. I was just talking in my conducting class today about why I don't think we would need to be dogmatic about holding the stick straight out in front of us and twisting our wrist. And I was saying, like, you know, people sit all around the conductor, and like very few people are actually having the stick pointed right at them, because I don't think you should like twist your wrist to make sure the stick's straight up. So here you go. I mean, like, now you got people behind you, so you know, don't worry about pointing the stick directly at people. It's okay.
So I tried to take a count. We came a little bit early and watched some of the rehearsal, and I tried to count string players, and so it seems like there's a good group of first and second violins. Could you take us through the numbers briefly?
So we've got I don't think everyone was here tonight. We were down a couple of violas, mm-hmm. but we've got six of each violin. So okay. there's 12, five violas, five cellos, and two basses. We only had one bass tonight, yeah. but so 24 total.
Great.
And that number was chosen based mm-hmm. on if we were having a live concert later in the year, which we're planning to, and we're allowed to use a concert hall like Libby Gardner Concert Hall, we've been told that 24 musicians is our max on the stage.
Okay.
And so I wanted to say, what can we balance with that? And the reason we didn't put winds in this time is that if you were to do that, you have to take away so many strings to make the space work. And it just seemed like this would be a great opportunity to do these two great string serenades, or String and the Wind Serenade mm-hmm. by Dvorak.
What was the process for picking who got to participate?
Ah, great.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, that's it's a different question on the different types of ensembles you have. Mm-hmm. So for the Salt Lake Symphony as a community ensemble, we basically started with who wants to play. And some of our musicians have opted out mm-hmm. for whatever reasons, and we've totally said that's fine. And then we decided, based on the violins who did play, believe it or not, only 12 said they wanted to play. So we had our violins.
Oh, perfect.
Violas, we ended up with 8, mm-hmm. and we only needed 5. So we had to talk with the principal player and decide, you know, who we would choose from that, making sure that the 3 who were excluded this time yeah. would be included on the next event.
Okay. I see.
So we have to keep track. As a community orchestra, people are engaged because they want to be mm-hmm. engaged. And when we can't use them, we want to make sure that next time they've got the first call.
Yeah. And yeah. I think that's the key thing. As long as there's a process that people feel like they're engaged with. I know with my orchestras, I've fortunately, the number of people who requested to participate is about the number that I could handle. So it kind of worked out that way. So going forward, you're going to do this concert on the 19th. What's the ideas afterwards? I mean, we talked about this some a few weeks ago. How has that evolved and changed your colder weather plan?
Well, it's changed quite a bit. And that's some of it is venue issues. We're still kind of the whole idea of venues is very fluid. What venues available, when you can get into those venues, and what works, right? So some of what I had planned, I think I've got some great plans that just may not happen this year. And so what we're going to do for our next event, what we're planning to do is do an educational video and performance of the water music, handle water music. So we're going to combine more strings and winds, but do it up at one of the state parks and somewhere where there's actual water.
Hopefully. Yeah.
Like, was it Willard Bay maybe?
Maybe not Willard Bay. I don't want too many power boats behind. I think that ruins the effect of Handel's water music if you got water skiers going by.
If you can coordinate them in certain moments.
Well, who knows? Maybe Handel would have composed something for power boat nonet or something.
If only he had the option. it's like Beethoven and the tuba, you know.
Anyways. As long as the water skiers are in powdered wigs, it'll look great.
So that's still kind of in flux.
A little bit. You know, when you look at ahead at the sort of really traditional things you do, like we have the, you know, Christmas programs. Everyone has a Christmas program. We have to figure out how to make that happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we have to figure out a way to do it. Luckily, there's a lot of Baroque music that sounds Christmassy, even if it's not Christmassy. Or you could, you know, even throw things like Vivaldi's Winter in. Not particularly Christmassy, but it's winter,
mm-hmm.
and so it's things like that work. So those types of things I can see as a possibility, we have other problems with like our Vienna Ball, not knowing in February if we're going to be able to do that. That's a big fundraiser for us where we have generally 300 to 400 dancers come, and it's a big deal.
That's an event that's not COVID conducive.
Not COVID friendly. You know, right now the idea is that we'll do some sort of online, waltz kind of thing, and then have the actual Vienna Ball in maybe in May or June, or we're a lot of us are putting off these sort of big things, saying okay, it's not going to happen this year, but let's see if we can make it happen next summer. And so I think even the way we define seasons of this sort of September to May or September to April symphony season might change a little bit. We might be doing more things in the summer just because it's becomes a better time to do it.
Yeah, I think we all have to start thinking about if this is more long-term than what we hope it would be. Kind of how we can reimagine how things are going to go. So do you have any thoughts along those lines, like an ongoing...
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think the problem is we don't know how the waves are going to hit. I could even imagine things that, if it goes the right way, if everyone does the right thing and things are looking good, maybe March, April next year looks really good. The disease may not be wiped out, but we might be back to some more regular kind of activities, and then we might have to be more restrictive again. After that. And so that's the real challenge for any of us, more so for a professional ensemble that has a payroll to meet. But anybody that's trying to plan for the next thing, and I think I mentioned it last time, you only can plan for the next maybe 4 weeks out. That's about it. Say, okay, let's give it a shot. I think we can make it to this program. And that's kind of the way we're looking at it. It's a completely different paradigm.
Speaking of challenges, what other challenges have you come across that maybe you didn't think of right away or just happened to bubble up and you thought, oh, that's, I've been so busy with all this other stuff, actually getting the logistics taken care of and scheduling and programming. What has surprised you about this process of trying to get all this happening in the fall?
I think speaking from the university side, the University of Utah, the thing that I did not anticipate for that made me shift what I was doing there was the realization that we were sharing wind players between three different ensembles on campus, wind ensemble, orchestra, and jazz.
Which is normal for them.
It's very normal for a college situation. But the problem with that was we could no longer sort of keep these self-contained cohorts. And so we had to, I was very disappointed to have to do this, but we had to say no winds for the orchestra for the fall.
Oh, wow.
Only winds in the band, right?
And I think we were talking about this perhaps. Yes, you can't do winds, or rather you can't do band without winds or brass.
Right.
But you can do orchestra.
There is luckily some great music, and one of the pieces we did tonight, it's just a lovely, lovely piece of music, this Dvorak Serenade, and there's music by Tchaikovsky and Mozart and Bach, and I mean, it's really great, and including music being written today, the Utah Phil, we're going to do a world premiere of a piece by Stacey Garup.
Excellent.
That she's writing for the Utah Phil,
great.
Arranging a choral piece for us, and so even in all of this uncertainty of the pandemic, we're actually doing a brand new piece of music.
So that leads me to something I want to talk about. Have you discovered since the last time we talked any good recommendations for pandemic programming to put it away?
I think there's two ways to go. One is we're only going to do these instruments. And then there's also another way that you can look at it and say, where does the solo instrument contingent that we can, from the orchestra, that we can highlight, like Copland's Quiet City. I might have mentioned that last time. But you could have a trumpet player and an English horn player and really highlight them. It's mainly a string group that is a string group that's the rest of the orchestra. Or your clarinet player playing the Copland Clarinet Concerto, two Copland pieces right there. A very difficult piece, but the rest of it is a string body, without having to worry about all of the interchangeable variable winds that you get.
Okay.
So I think that there's a lot of repertoire there that is, frankly, overlooked. in the orchestral repertoire, we sort of get the idea that an orchestra is this set of musicians, and we're always trying to fit that smaller subset first, and then we expand out, rather than taking that subset and going down the other way. So, you know, there's a lot of music that has one oboe player. And not two. There's, you know, Stravinsky, Pulcinella, lovely piece of music, hard piece of music, but it's you know, more of a single wind kind of piece rather than a rather than a you know,
a chamber winds thing.
Yeah, plus exactly.
Orchestra. Yeah.
So there's a lot of music that I think is going to be, that's always been there, and we've always known it's there. We've always known it's good music, but we're going to, it's going to have a more prominent place in the concerts for the next couple of years.
How have the musicians been feeling? Have you been able to take that temperature, so to speak?
I think really, that's a great question. You know, that's a dangerous question to ask any conductor, right? Oh, the musicians, they love it.
And what are you feeling from them, I guess? Is what's your perspective on how players are handling this?
I think they are really excited to be back together. And they face the same uncertainty we all faced. I mean, we were, you know, cut off at the knees in March. And we had all of these great plans, and they were looking forward to this music that didn't happen and won't happen for a while yet. And the fact that they didn't know if they would be back, and they saw the same thing happening from the top professional levels here in town, the Utah Symphony, you know, closed shop the same time we did, essentially. The universities closed shop, the public schools, all the church music, everything got shut down. And there's this need we have as musicians to do music. Even when we're so busy that we don't think we have time to do music and we're tired and we don't realize how much it means until it's gone. And then it wasn't gone for a week or two. It was gone for 22 weeks or however 24 weeks we've been out. And then it starts to become, you feel that hole, the missing the music. And so the fact that we've come back together, you know, I've been back now for 2 weeks doing music at the U and here regularly. And I think, oh, it's just all the challenges. We're outside, and there's mosquitoes and sprinklers and all kinds of things. We're playing music.
It didn't seem to bother anybody. I have to say, you know, this is the first rehearsal that I've, live rehearsal that I've attended, gosh, since everything shut down in March, I guess. And the sense of, it wasn't so much a sense of relief as it was just a return to some sort of normalcy. And everybody seemed really, really happy. Not just willing, but happy to deal with the temperature fluctuations and the mosquitoes and the sprinklers, the noise and the crowd. It doesn't seem to matter. It's amazing what we'll not put up with, but it's amazing what we can adjust to when it's required, really, to do this. And it really kind of puts into perspective what really matters, I think, at the end of all this. If this is the end, if we can even call it that.
Well, we're somewhere.
Yeah. Well, it's the beginning. It's a new beginning of something that we didn't know that we'd see. Mm. And now we see it, and we see that there's a possibility here. And, you know, even though we were talking afterwards with some of the musicians, they had some ideas for where the concert could happen, because we also don't want to have, you know, we don't want to end up on the evening news of, you know, look at this terrible gathering, you know, that the Salt Lake Symphony.
You want a super spreader event.
Yeah, no. Exactly. The musicians are more engaged in those solutions. Mm. Usually they just say, oh, the concert's at this time and I'll show up and open my case and play the concert. But now they want to be part of that. They want to discuss and say, hey, I have an idea. Why don't we do this? I'll talk to my friend who knows this. You know, I mean, who owns a barn and, you know, whatever. And there's all kinds of ideas out there that I haven't seen that synergy in any group for a long time. It's usually somebody else's problem to figure out. Yeah. I'll just work on my notes, you know. But now I think we know how important it is that we're all engaged in
it. And notes really aren't the most important thing at the end of the day. It's really, as I've remarked to myself over and over again, it's really about being with each other, at least in a nominal way. Of course, the social distancing thing is different when that takes an adjustment, but it's really not a huge leap. It's not a big deal, really. People can hear each other. They can see each other still. And I remember there was that concern really, really early on of, oh, it's just not going to be the same. It's not worth doing. I have to say that this, at least to me, proves that that's a minimal concern.
It's like, can you get together and make music with other people?
Yes.
And if you can answer yes to that, then I think I think that goes a very long way, whether you can do the rep you wanted to do or not.
Oh, the energy in the space was just wonderful. Everybody just seemed so happy to be here.
When I had my first rehearsal, like I said, last Thursday, and it just felt right to be back with everybody, even though we weren't all together. We just had our strings. But it felt right. We were back in our old rehearsal space. We were seeing our familiar faces, although just from the nose up. it felt right just to be back doing it. And it didn't matter, you know, what rep we were doing necessarily.
It's different. You know, we're always excited to start a new season. You know, you had a little time off in the summer, and you come back in the fall, there's a new season. But this year, it feels different, even with the uncertainty, because we now have something that we didn't know would be back. And we didn't know how it would be back, and it's different.
And that's amazing. It just proves that it can be done, and that whatever challenges are on the horizon, and there will be, because it won't stay, 70 degrees and light out forever.
I got to say,
have to find something else to do.
We are lucky here in Salt Lake City, Utah. Not every place in the country can be outside, even at this time of year. With the low humidity, so we have to do a little send up to the weather and the Utah climate.
That reminds me of something.
Could you imagine doing this back in the South?
No, that's what I wanted to ask. Is have any players?
Oh my gosh!
Have approached you with an issue or said anything about having an issue with their instrument because of the dry air? Okay, because we couldn't do this out back. You know, east of the Rockies,
basically
it's just swampy. You can't.
It would be you'd be carried away by mosquitoes.
Indeed.
And at round sunset, my God.
Well, I can't imagine being a string player and trying to play my instrument when it's, 85 and 100% humidity. How are you going to...
I've done that, though. I've done that. We did a series of state parks concerts in Kentucky.
Oy. Yikes.
And it was, your fingerboard is wet.
Yo, that can't be good for the instrument.
It's like... Ugh. You just can't believe how drenched you afterwards. Yeah. You get back on the bus that drove you 2 hours, and the AC's running on the bus, and you're totally drenched, and you walk in, it's like oh my god.
Then you start to freeze.
Yes, it's frozen. Too cold.
Yep.
But those are concerts that we all complained about. You did it because it was a gig or it was in your contract, and this is more like we don't complain. It's like here we are, we're back. So I'm really excited about it.
Good.
Matt, do you have anything else?
No, that's great.
Well,
thanks
Dr. Bob, again, we really appreciate you sitting down and talking with us and letting us crash your rehearsal. We're going to put some clips up on the show, so we'll produce it. And again, don't forget to let us know where the concert will be. We'll put that out there. So thanks so much. And,
so good to see you in person again after, 6 months or so?
It is.
Not being able to, and to see everybody doing what they love to do.
Yeah, and this is like a homecoming for you and I, Matt, because we're at different times assistants here. So Salt Lake Symphony has always got a special place in our hearts. So it's great to be here. So thanks so much.
You bet. It's great to be back, and great to see you guys.
Very nice of Dr. Baldwin to have us there. It was really good to kind of see the Salt Lake Symphony again.
Oh, it was great.
I think we've mentioned this before, but both you and I were assistant conductors for the symphony. I was part of our graduate assistantship when we were doing our doctorates at the University of Utah. And I don't know about for you, but it was really one of the main things that enticed me to come to the school, is because being the assistant for such a great civic orchestra like that was really really a big part of it.
It was such a wonderful experience, too. They're just such great people who really love to play, and they take a lot of pride in their group. They're well-managed, both within their ranks and from the administration itself, and they've really clearly been working all spring to summer on how to make music happen for them.
Yeah.
And they all agreed that this was going to happen, and that they were going to be safe about it, but also understanding of those who felt they couldn't participate. And it's just, I think they're just a really great example, and everything about them is everything about what they do really, I think, speaks to the quality of the people in the group. They're not just great players who want to get together and play. They're really great people who support each other and really just made it happen.
Yeah.
It's great to see. It was really great to visit.
It is, and it's an organization that's got a strong foundation.
They've been around for quite some time, haven't they?
They've been around, I think, for over 30 years. Yeah. My civic orchestra is the oldest.
Oh.
It is.
Taylorsville Wasatch.
Wasatch. Wasatch has been around It's over 60 years. I should know this.
You never fail to remind me of that whenever that comes up, Larry. You're very proud of that.
I'm proud of the organization that it has endured and kept going.
That's rare, and especially for a community, a smaller community group.
It's definitely had ups and downs in terms of size, and we're now at a very large size. Although with this COVID stuff, who knows what's going to happen? But good news to report, we do have found a location for our rehearsals.
Excellent.
For Wasatch, so we will be going forward speaking with strings
of,
only.
Speaking of locations, we discussed with Dr. Baldwin that they don't yet have a location for their September 19th concert.
Yeah.
They're waiting. They're just waiting to find a spot. So we don't have an update on that, unfortunately, but you can go to their website, which is simply www.saltlakesymphony.org. No spaces, no periods, saltlakesymphony.org. And there should be updates there as soon as possible, I would imagine.
Yeah. And I'm kind of excited for this video that they're looking to do, this water-themed video that Dr. Baldwin talked about. They're going to do it at a state park somewhere. So they're coming up with creative ways to deal with this. We're also going to do a recorded video. I don't think we'll be at a state park, but we're going to do something recorded for our performance. So we're all figuring it out, and Salt Lake Symphony is a really great group. And sitting here talking about this, I just sort of had an idea for a show. I think for those people who are interested in founding a community orchestra, maybe we should talk about how those things are structured and some do's and don'ts. I had the experience of founding an orchestra back in North Carolina, and I think we could maybe bring in somebody from the Salt Lake Symphony to talk about that, because it's certainly a lot of work, but it's very rewarding, and if structured right, and you have good systems in place and a strong kind of culture of how the orchestra is going to work, it can be a really robust kind of an institution.
Yeah. Self-sustaining, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, well, the maestro is here, so that means
it's time for the rant of the day.
Time for the rant. All right, Matt.
Yep.
Go for it.
Well, Toscanini doesn't sound too happy. He never does, really.
No.
It's the same.
He's constantly grumpy.
No, so, we were talking about Christmas carols as my nerd moment of the day, and it's also my rant of the day because, for crying out loud, do we have to do the same ones every year?
Yes.
Every single year. I understand that for most people they hear them once a year, but us musicians, we've got to think about them starting in like June every year for 6 months. We're thinking about Christmas carols. So my rant of the day is, while I acknowledge the variety of carols and the breadth of their texts and tunes, I wish that we had more of a modern caroling tradition happening. I would love to see carolers out and about actually singing carols, because this is how a lot of these carols this is where a lot of them came from to begin with.
So in the public square,
yes,
singing carols,
people just
door
singing,
to door,
adapting tunes, creating new texts, and somehow we've lost that tradition. We just kind of sit on the ones that we know, and of course there's the pop arrangements that everybody thinks that they can do every year. A Mariah Carey Christmas.
Hey, I gotta say that All I Want for Christmas Is You, or whatever it's called, it's not a Christmas carol, but I think it's gonna be that's a good one. Come on now.
Yeah, I guess I'm the traditionalist in that sense.
I love the tradition.
Well, I mean, the traditionalist in the sense that I think the process is what makes it special. It's not so much the tunes themselves. I think it's the idea of creating something that is new every year. So that's my rant on Christmas carols. They're just overdone.
Now, when I sit as a young child in the heat of the look at that
VW bus.
Oh, I love those.
Yes, things like 40 years old.
That's a land ship. You can do some iron tent camping.
It's a classic.
Yeah. Anyway,
almost as old as you. No,
I'm just
kidding.
Stop. We almost got through a whole show without any comments on traffic. couldn't happen. Anyway, so what I was saying, when I was a kid and sitting in the 70 degree weather Southern Christmas with the air conditioning running or something stupid like that. And I would imagine what a New England Christmas was like and wish I could be there in this idealized thing. I think of, there goes FedEx.
Yeah, FedEx.
Now they're piling up on us.
Yeah.
I would think, oh, you know, I could sit with my hot chocolate around the fire, and then Christmas carolers would come at my door. Yeah. Does that happen? You're
no,
a Yankee.
No, it doesn't happen.
Never no, happens. They don't do that in Connecticut.
No, people don't want to be bothered, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, out in the country, you know, if you do that out in the country, you get a. I'm not going to go there.
Just be warned. Don't careful the door you knock on. Door.
Yes, right. Yeah.
Fair enough. All right. Well, I have a totally unrelated rant. It's a weather rant. I'm sorry.
So yeah, weather's been a little funky.
Yeah, so I've been complaining about the heat, and I know I've constantly whined about that, but I don't like it. Well, finally, we had a beautiful, cool day. The skies were gray, and fall was like in my heart. It was blooming, and I was like, oh, yes, oh, it's here. Fall is coming. And then I looked at the weather, and it's going to be 100 degrees tomorrow.
Yeah.
Come on. This roller coaster weather stuff.
Yeah,
it just
really
drives me
havoc
nuts.
on my system too. My body doesn't know how to handle these changes.
Yeah. And like I got shorts out, I've got jeans out, I've got sweaters. I mean, it's like all this stuff has to be at the ready.
I'm wearing a sweater right now.
You are, and I'm
but
wearing
it's
shorts.
It's gonna be 80 degrees, but we're in the shade.
That's true.
It's that nice dry air.
Yeah, I tend to run a little on the warm.
I think it's a good rant. That's it's just the changes that. The constant changes that get me. You know, if it was 70 degrees and sunny all year, I'd be fine with that. I would like a thunderstorm every now and then, you know.
70 degrees and sunny all year?
80. Let's say 80.
Even worse.
Oh, yeah.
Even worse. You and Brandon need to go back to San Diego. I'm sure it's lovely. My sister lives there now. But,
yeah, that's what it's like.
I need some change of seasons. But anyway, I look forward to stop ranting about the weather when fall will be here, and then I'll just, my heart will bloom with joy as the pumpkins come out and the leaves fall, and I'll just be happy. And I got to say though, I love having a block of time off as an educator. We have these enforced vacation times. I just wish that it could be during the fall,
because
now the weather's changing, and now I got to go back to work.
Yeah,
and it's like, why couldn't I have had that time off when I really like the weather?
Yeah, so, like anyway, be inside in the air conditioning in the summer. You know,
yeah. I'm
why
just,
not? Yeah,
yeah.
Anyway, but some schools do that. They do the trimester thing.
Yeah, I know. Well,
yeah. Well,
such is life, as they say. First world problems.
Indeed.
I'm happy to have work and happy to have a job. So I should just shut up and stop
amen
complaining.
To that.
Anyway, so Matt, thank you again for hosting. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for going on our field trip.
Oh, my pleasure. It's great to have you here. It's great to meet you out there too.
Yeah. It's always nice to get back and connect with those folks again. That's a great group. So anyway, pay attention to their website. Keep your eyes open for when they're September 19th. Is that the date?
6 o'clock concert.
Yeah.
Because it'll be outside somewhere.
Yeah.
They need the daylight.
And they're doing things right. They're very safe. So if they figured it out, you can feel pretty good that they're thinking about safety. So that's why they're doing it outside. Mm. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in, everybody. And we're going to leave you with a little bit more of the Salt Lake Symphony at their rehearsal.